After 15 years working in corporate fashion at Kate Spade, a job I loved and never thought that I would leave, the pandemic hit in March 2020, and a few months later, I was laid off. I had the luxury of free time and to figure out what I wanted to do with myself for the first time in years, and then this happened.
Hi everyone, I'm Jenny Rudin.
And I'm Katie Demo, and we're the co-founders of Brass.
You're listening to And Then This Happened,
a podcast where we discuss the whirlwinds of entrepreneurship, the ups and downs, all the messiness in between, and what it really takes to build a business.
Katie and I are on this journey right now. We're here to get rid of the glamour, remove the sheen, and demystify the entrepreneurial experience.
That's what the show is all about. Join us for conversations with founders that have seen it all and done it all.
Whether you're building a business yourself,
aspiring to build one someday,
or just love a great story,
we're glad you're here. Welcome to
And Then This Happened. Hi, everyone. Thanks for being here today for our conversation with Jamie Banks, founder of swimwear line Change of Scenery. At a young age, Jamie knew she wanted to enter the corporate world after having parents who were entrepreneurs themselves. A long career in corporate fashion ensued.
Jamie worked for several major brands across a few product categories, ready-to-wear and swim primarily. Her longest tenure was at Kate Spade, where she really rose through the ranks. And Jamie actually had no intention of ever leaving corporate fashion. But at the height of the pandemic, the day before her 40th birthday, unfortunately, she was laid off. And that began her accidental journey into entrepreneurship.
Thanks for being here, everyone. We have a lot to learn from Jamie, who came into this space at a very different stage of life than most founders on this show. And she proves that taking this leap can happen really at any time. Let's dive in.
Jamie, it is so fabulous to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
So can you tell us about your first exposure to entrepreneurship?
For sure. I love that question, actually, because my parents were entrepreneurs. I didn't know what that was growing up, but my parents owned their own toy store, actually, a hobby shop, a toy store, physically every little kid's dream. To me, entrepreneurship was that my dad owned the business so he could bring me home toys every single day. I realized now that he had to pay for those toys. And there were amazing things about having parents that were entrepreneurs. They were their own bosses, and it was an amazing role model for me, knowing that you could sort of do anything and do something that you were really passionate about. But I never thought I would have my own business because I always wished that my dad got vacation days and a paycheck like everyone else's dad. And it was hard to take vacations. And when things were good, they were really good. And when things were not good, they were really not good. And I don't know how much I understood about it growing up, but I certainly didn't understand as much as I do having been an entrepreneur for a little over a year, because there's just so much that I didn't know, that I didn't know about entrepreneurship. I just sort of had that role model and interestingly did not want to follow in that path.
Yeah. Your career has had several chapters to it, pretty distinct ones. So give us a little bit of the overview. How did you start your career in fashion and what led up to this point where you launched your own business?
So I had always known that I wanted to be in sort of like corporate America, like I said, like I just wanted to get a paycheck and have vacation days. Interestingly, because I had grown up with entrepreneur parents, I had this role model of this unbelievable work ethic to a fault, right? So because I had only had role models that owned their own business, I treated my corporate life like it was my business. So I was never able to walk away. I never used my vacation days. So I guess that's sort of the irony and maybe makes sense where I am now. But I went to Cornell for undergrad. I went to graduate school at the Academy of Art in San Francisco, and I won an internship at the graduate fashion show to move to Milan to work for Carlo Sozzani at Corso Comodici. And that was my first job, and I got to design every single category at Ten Corso Como, their private label, and I was exposed to like all different products and all different designers. I didn't know then, I didn't understand until many years later, but it sort of laid the groundwork for just really loving working across multiple product categories for a brand that had a very distinct point of view and like a very recognizable point of view. I mean, Ten Corso Como, for anyone who's been, was the first sort of multi-brand, super high luxury fashion store of its kind. I mean, now, you know, there's Jeffrey, Karen Isabel, like all these, you know, Brown's Fashion, all these amazing stores. And it was very recognizable. It has this logo that I guess in America we would think look like the Target bullseye, like hand painted. But in Italy, it's the 10 Corso Como logo. And just being able to apply the branding of 10 Corso Como across all their product categories, from candles to Supergas to sweaters to tops to, you know, bags, all these different things. It really made me fall in love with overseeing design as a whole, which like really, I think, defined my career in many ways. I came back to Italy. My first job in New York was for Gwen Stefani when she had her company Lamb, Love Angel Music Baby. It was really cool too, because Gwen, it was like when she was on her BNAS tour. I can't even spell it. So we sort of got to like, you know, meet her on tour and show her the collection. And she was just like the coolest. She's as cool and nice as you would wish and hope that she would be. And back then, we only designed two collections. We only designed spring and fall. And you got a break in between, and you got to the sort of refresh and go to the library and do research and sort of like maybe take a break or any of those things. And that was sort of the last time that happened, because anyone that's listening that works in fashion knows like there are no breaks anymore. That was 2006, 2007. And right after that, fashion started becoming, first it was pre-spring, spring, or is fall, spring, summer, holiday. Then it became pre-spring, spring, summer, pre-fall, fall, holiday. Then they started layering in like special collection for Saks, special collection for Nordstrom, special collection for the Oscars. And then I never got a break again. I went from Lamb to Kate Spade. They called me and they said, "We want to interview you for a designer." And I said, "I'm not a handbag designer." And they said, "Come in anyway." And I sort of said no for like a few times. And they said, "Come, like things are happening at Kate Spade. Things are changing. You should come meet us." And it just goes to show you should take every opportunity that is ever presented to you. Because I was like sure that I wasn't a handbag designer. And I went in, and that week, they announced that week that Kate and Andy had sold the company to Liz Claiborne and that Deborah Lloyd was coming in as creative director. So Deborah had been creative, an executive vice president at Burberry in London. And then she was the head of Banana Republic for a very long time. And I knew of her because I went to grad school in San Francisco, where Banana Republic used to be fully based. And people just said that she was the most unbelievable leader and mentor and designer and all those things. So I took the job, and she said, "We're going to start Ready to Wear. I know it's a handbag company, but I have really big dreams for this company, and the DNA of Kate Spade and the customer loves it and all the things." And so I started out sort of doing like odds and ends around Kate Spade. And we did. We started Ready to Wear together. I mean, under her guidance, she taught me everything. She became like one of the most important, you know, women in my career. I'm so grateful for her. The first collection couldn't have any zippers. It had to be big enough that you could get it over your head, because there were no dressing rooms in the Kate Spade stores because they were handbag stores. So nothing had to be tried on in private. It had to be something you could sort of throw on or tie in the back. We made cocktail dresses from $60 Cucirelli Duchess satin fabric that they were using for the handbags that literally looked like aprons. I can't believe anybody even bought them, to be honest, but it was very magical. And they just sold them in the handbag stores. Yeah, Deborah just could make anything happen. About a year later, we launched the collection, a real ready-to-wear collection for wholesale. And that was the start of Kate Spade Ready to Wear.
Wow.
Wow. So, and what year was that? Yeah. When did you start there?
I started at Kate Spade in 2007. I never met Kate, sadly. I started a week after her and Andy exited the company.
The takeaway for me is that you launched a business without really knowing that you were launching a business, or like you weren't under the pressure of being an actual entrepreneur, but you actually had the pleasure of launching a business. I wonder how that really played into your desire to start your own company.
You know, that's so interesting. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, I did. I guess we did it from the ground up. I mean, it's much easier to do when Liz Claiborne is behind you, that's for sure. But, you know, better, what do they say? Better to make mistakes on someone else's dime. It really was starting a business within a business from the ground up. And, you know, in some ways, when you start a business from zero, it's easier because you can sort of like choose your own avenue and your suppliers and your supply chain and all the things. Like, I was starting a ready-to-wear business inside a handbag business. So everything at Kate was set up for handbags. So when you really start thinking about it, it doesn't sound that wildly different, but handbags are not a sized business. So there's not really like any of those challenges with fit or inventory. Handbag materials don't work for ready to wear. Handbag trims don't work for ready to wear. There's no dressing rooms, like I said. So it was complicated to start within a business that was set up for handbags and shoes at the time. But Liz Claiborne was very, very supportive. And I guess similarly to your point, like it's sort of that Liz Claiborne network that they provided for me at the time, now that sort of translated into friends, family, like anyone I've ever met in my life who will help me and support me. And people have been really amazing. And the people at Liz Claiborne were amazing. They actually assigned Tim Gunn to me. He was like the creative director of Liz Claiborne at the time. And they said, you have to help this little girl, basically. I mean, I was 25. You have to help this little girl launch ready to wear with Deborah for Kate Spade.
I mean, 25? That is young. That really is very young.
Well, yes, entrepreneurs are very young these days, so maybe it makes more sense.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. That's crazy, 25.
I feel like that's an amazing segue kind of into a topic something we've been so curious about, Jamie. And I actually think we should like speed up a little bit the story. And you got your foot in the door at Kate Spade, launching an entire new product category for them. It's probably an incredible learning experience, as you've mentioned. And you were there for almost 8-ish years, right?
Yeah, altogether. I laughed because you always think the grass is greener. And then luckily, yes, Deborah asked me to come back. So,
okay, there we go.
Yeah, I spent most of my career at Kate Spade, like a little over 9 years probably. And it was a good run. I love that company. That was an amazing place to work.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. In the very end, though, tell us sort of how the chapter ended there. And we understand that that played a kind of a major role in setting the stage for your entrepreneurial venture now.
Let's see. COVID, the pandemic started in March 2020, and the stores were closed for a really long time. And Tapestry, the parent company of Kate Spade, was very good to us. You know, everyone laid off people. Like similar competitive companies did very big layoffs very early on. It's funny because I understand now I didn't understand really cash flow then, like I understand it now on a much smaller scale than Tapestry. But the fact that they kept us all employed is really amazing. And they paid the store employees and the stores were closed. And then in July 2020, Tapestry made the tough decision to shut down the ready-to-wear division. And it really came as a very big surprise. I was overseeing, I don't know, probably $150 million of business across multiple categories. I had sort of moved on from ready-to-wear. I was still doing outlet ready-to-wear, but I was overseeing all the licensed ready-to-wear adjacent categories. So swimwear, sleepwear, outerwear, sneakers and eyewear and fashion accessories. And it was a very, very big business, but they couldn't pay the designers. I mean, certainly not the expensive ones like me, because they didn't need any designs. There was all this product sitting unsold in the stores, you know, so it was more a sort of strategy. I'm sure I wasn't part of these conversations at Tapestry, but, you know, what to do with the product that nobody saw, nobody bought, how to move the seasons around. And they laid off almost our entire team, and they decided to sort of shut down the ready-to-wear division, just make it really small with an outside partner. And I got laid off the day before my 40th birthday, actually, which is very old in fashion. 40 is old in fashion.
That must have been a really tough day. I mean, did it hit you like a ton of bricks? Were you expecting it? How did that pan out?
You know, obviously people were scared for their jobs just because in spring 2020, the whole world was scared for their jobs, right? But I really was very, very shocked that our team experienced layoffs because we were managing all these, you know, different businesses across the board. So it did, you know, sort of, it was sort of in shock for a little while because I really had expected to work at Kate Spade maybe for the rest of my life. and maybe that's not a good thing, you know? But it was a very big surprise. And I spent a long time, like once I sort of got over the initial shock, I spent some time with executive coaches and all different things trying to figure out like what I wanted to do next, because the ready to wear cycle had gotten very, very exhausting. I mean, like I said, like there were so many seasons, so many special collections, so many special projects. And I really just missed that time for being creative that you lose as you become more senior as a designer. Because of course, like any job, you just start, you know, managing people, which I love doing, but you get farther and farther away from actually designing or actually working on the product. And I sort of came to the conclusion that I didn't want to work in ready to wear for sure, because that is the most exhausting category. And there's so much competition and there's so much clothing and there's so much like inexpensive, very good clothing now. So that makes it complicated, because Zara and Target, for whatever you think about fast fashion, they are very good. So you're no longer competing with, you know, if you're going for a luxury customer, you're now the luxury customer has no problem going to Zara and Target. It's almost cool. So it just has gotten very, very hard over the years. And I loved working on the specialty categories. I loved having like a very specific customer in mind, the swim customer, the sleep customer, the outerwear customer. You sort of like know more specifically who she is, what she needs the product for, what her problem is that you need to solve for her. Ready to wear is like a little bit more wide open. But I didn't want to have my own business. I just wanted to figure out where I wanted to work that would feel as fulfilling. I was trying to figure out where I wanted to work that would be, yeah, that would make me feel as fulfilled as I had been at Kate Spade, and potentially would give me the creative space again to sort of feel, you know, all the things that I loved about being a designer. And I did all these work with these coaches, and one thing is the interviews never came, right? I'm like a little bit expensive, and I was a little bit old. I had a very specific background in very girly brands. When I left Kate Spade, I worked at Millie, I worked at Shoshana. And so that was sort of seen as girly and specific, and the interviews never came, but also like there was nowhere that I was dying to work. Startup culture was really interesting to me because I felt like in startup culture, you could wear a lot of hats and you could do a lot of things and be exposed to a lot of things, but I didn't really feel like I was in the position to take that big of a pay cut. Well, now I took the biggest pay cut.
The biggest.
That's sort of a fast forward.
Yeah, that's the big pay cut. But isn't it funny how sometimes, like, you saw yourself staying at Kate Spade for, like, the rest of your life, but also that ready-to-wear was totally exhausting you. It wasn't exciting for you anymore. And it's almost how the world somehow sometimes just needs to, like, or the universe, whatever, like, pull the rug out from under you and be like, hey, wait a minute, Jamie, like it's time to figure out what you really want to do. Because I think that that's sometimes these shitty things that happen in our lives open up a door to something really unique and really special and allow you the freedom to think differently, which is a luxury, in my opinion. So we'd love to hear about how you started your business.
So let's see, I got laid off in July 2020. Like I said, spent the next few months sort of trying to figure things out. And I spent an extraordinary amount of time building a resume, a portfolio, a website. I had nothing. I hadn't interviewed for a job in ever, almost. And then I finally got a consulting job. It was for a swim brand, actually. And I was so excited and I was so thrilled that somebody wanted me. I mean, I think a lot of people in the pandemic really felt this sort of lack of confidence in this career that they had built up. I mean, any of us that got laid off, for sure. You know, I spent 15 years building up this career and then all of a sudden nobody wanted me. I felt like I had like nothing to offer in fashion. And then I finally got this consulting job and they were lovely. The brand was lovely. It was for like a small swim brand, but it wasn't, let's say, how I would run a company or how I was used to corporate life running at Kate Spade. And I kept sort of, you know, saying to my husband, I can't believe they do this and I can't believe they do that and whatever. And he was like, you have to stop complaining. You can either be so happy that you got this consulting job, or if you really think you could do it better, you should do it better. But definitely you should stop complaining. I should mention my husband is an entrepreneur at heart. Like he has an MBA in entrepreneurship. So like that is a very easy statement to him to do it better or start a company. So at the same time, I had a mentor, a career-long mentor, who was the head of the New York office of the biggest Kate Spade ready-to-wear factory. And she was so supportive and wonderful to me after I was laid off. And she was always trying to introduce me to people. I mean, they produce a lot of companies ready to wear. So she knows everybody. And she was trying to help me get interviews and find a job. And she finally said to me, like, I don't know why you're trying to find a job. Like, you have something to say. You should start your own company. And if you do, we would love to partner with you. So it's basically the factory offering to partner with me and this wonderful mentor that I had who knew lots about like all different aspects of the industry. But she was partners with the factory, I should say. And so my husband was like, and you know what? Like, when are you ever going to have this time and space or this luxury, like you mentioned, to write a business plan? Like, even if you never wanted to do that, you're never going to have this chance again. You're going to go get this like corporate job that you're dreaming of, and then you're going to be working 70 hours a week in the city again, and you're never going to have this chance again. So you should do it. So that was sort of the first step. I Googled how to write a business plan. Ultimately, I downloaded a template for a business plan on Creative Marketplace. And the one I downloaded happened to be 80 pages. So I filled out all 80 of them. And my husband kept being like, what are you working on? Like, do you want me to look at it? And I was like, no, I'm just following this template, whatever. And I was done. I was like, here, do you want to see my business plan? I mean, it literally took me like 2 or 3 months to write the business plan. And he was, why is it 80 pages? And I was like, well, I thought that's what you told me to Google it. And that's what it had to be. And he was like, no, you're supposed to pick and choose the ones that make sense for your business. Like, no one's going to read this. But I do think a business plan, and he told me that this was going to be the case. He said, you know, people think you have to write a business plan because you're going to start a business. Writing a business plan is sort of like therapy. Like, it helps you walk through the steps of whether or not there is a white space for your business. If your business makes sense, is there a customer for your business? Because when you go through all the sections of the business plan and you have to answer whatever it's asking you to put on the page, you have to answer it. And if there's no answer for who the customer is, you should not start that business. If there's no problem that you're solving, you should not start that business. So I learned a lot writing the business plan, and I did believe in it more and more. And in the end, I presented it to this mentor of mine, and her husband said, we have no idea why you picked swim, but we will partner with you.
Why did you pick swim?
Why did I pick swim? Well, number one, I knew that I wanted to do a specialty category and not ready to wear, like I mentioned. And a lot of the specialty categories, I think, are, you know, sort of rocking and rolling. Like, I think there's nothing really else to say in sleepwear, loungewear, it's sort of like super saturated at that point. Outerwear requires like technical skills that like I don't have. I'm not an expert in tailoring or outerwear. So if you sort of like go through the specialty categories, athletic wear, that's not my background. But swim I've done for a really long time, and I love swim. And I think that there is a white space in swim. There's a lot of swim that is sexy and young and sort of caters to like a 20 something. And that's sort of the trend right now. And there's a lot of swim that's very, very designer, whether it's from Zara or an actual designer brand with like ruffles and cutouts and like all the bells and whistles. But like, you don't see people like that in real life. Like, you would think that person was crazy at the local mom pool. And then it sort of jumps to modesty swim, you know, like the miracle suits and togs and things like that. But there's not a lot that's like a little bit sexy and like super chic and sophisticated under $200 for like a regular 30 to 55-year-old person, like a young mom or a mom of high school kids or any of those things. Like, she deserves to feel good too. She doesn't have to wear a miracle suit. So I really genuinely did think there was a white space, and I identified the white space by going through the steps of the business plan and by asking every single one of my friends for their opinion.
Yeah, and I'm sure you got resounding support from your peers.
Resounding support. So every single person was like, yeah, I just buy J. Crew because it's easy. But J. Crew is very good, I have to say. They do a very good job.
So I think that's a really interesting segue into kind of like getting this thing off the ground and deciding at the outset that you would do so with a business partner. Tell us about making that decision in the first place. And then obviously we've understood from some conversations previously with you that ultimately that person's no longer in the picture with your business. I feel like that storytelling arc is going to be really interesting to folks. So give us a little color on that, Jamie.
So it's very unlikely that I would have started the business without the confidence boost that such a, I'll say, sort of like prestigious or someone I admired so much had enough confidence to partner with me. I would say by December 2020, when I wrote the business plan, I was so low on my confidence as a designer. And I realized by that point that so much of my self-worth was wrapped up in being a successful fashion designer and my identity, that the fact that they were willing to partner with me, and even went as far to say, like, we think you're talented and have something to add to the industry, was everything. You know, coupled with the support from obviously friends, family, and especially my husband, I never would have written the business plan on my own because I never wanted my own business. And at that point, certainly didn't feel like I was the person to launch a business. I realize now that I certainly had like all the qualifications and experience to launch a fashion business. But at the time, it didn't feel that way. We did not go through the steps that I realize now you must go through if you decide to be business partners. First of all, I didn't realize that it's really the closest thing to getting married. You guys are business partners. We didn't go through the steps of ensuring that we had the same vision for the company, the same goals for the company, the same goals for what we wanted to get out of the company. We're at different points in our career. This is sort of like my future. You know, I plan, hopefully, that this will be, you know, the next chapter, but also potentially the rest of my career. My business partner has had a wonderful career. She's quite a few years my senior. And this would sort of be like, you know, she has other priorities. She has another business. It wasn't like her, you know, her entire future. She has, you know, worked so hard for so many years to sort of like enjoy some of the things you might enjoy later in life when you have put all your hours in and put all your time in. We didn't have the same vision for marketing or, you know, how to acquire customers or no, we didn't go through any of those things. I was just like, oh my God, you want to partner with me? Great. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, we did do some go-to-market strategy. We did whiteboarding and we said, where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be in 10 years? I realize now that we really weren't on the same page, but I was so thrilled that we did that work and I felt like we walked out of it on the same page. We were not on the same page. We were just aware of what the other person wanted.
What page they were on.
Yeah. You know, like when I said, oh my God, if we sell $1 million in 5 years, like I would be so happy. And my business partner said, what? $1 million? I'm not doing this for $1 million. Like, no way. You know, for her, it was much bigger. But I will also say, like, she has been a part of a few businesses launching. Like, this was not so, like, monumental and unbelievable to her. And she has much more experience in a lot of the other areas of the business, logistics and product development and production, all these things. That for her, it made sense to maybe go a little bit faster and to make it happen, like, a little bigger, a little bit faster. But that was not my initial desire for the company. And I think, you know, now that I'm back on my own at the company, it is a lot for me. Maybe not the route that I would have taken. But I got very wrapped up in just being so happy that someone like them would want to partner with me. And, you know, they were very excited about a new brand and a new, you know, being like initial founders of a luxury brand. They probably overlooked a lot of things about me too. And the other thing was we had known each other a very long time. Like I said, she was my mentor for a very long time, but it was not the same kind of relationship. We never worked side by side. So, you know, she was always executing design development, product development, and production for whatever big company I was working at, mostly Kate Spade. And I was the client. That's a very different relationship. When you work side by side, you really need to be aligned in a lot more ways than a vendor-client relationship.
While there were some, I guess, blinders you put up because you were so looking for that validation when she initially expressed interest in partnering with you, and obviously that goes a long way, and it's not something to discount. I think at all junctures in our careers, we need that type of validation, entrepreneurial or otherwise, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur or not. At various junctures, you really need the validation of others that you really admire and respect, mentors, people in your industry that are peers. So that's obviously was a really smart reason for you to partner with her initially, not to mention the sort of manufacturing side of the business that she brought into the equation. There was a lot of really intelligent tactical decisions there too. I think what's really important in your story is that you made a fairly quick decision to part ways with that first partner. And I feel like the mistake a lot of founders make is holding on to those initial partners that aren't right for a lot longer than they should. So a testament too to your experience and to kind of your foresight, I suppose, the fact that you could really trust your instinct on this is that you recognized fairly quickly, all right, this isn't going to work and I've got to do something about it. So talk to us a little bit about how that thought crystallized and then ultimately what you did and when you did it.
So another big thing that we sort of overlooked in the beginning, or not sort of, is I think when you enter into a business partnership, it needs to be very clear what role everybody believes that they are going to play in that business, and also what role the other partners think that you were going to play in that business, because we were not aligned. For me, I was partnering with my business partner because they brought to the table a lot of things that I was not an expert in, namely production, logistics, some product development, things of that nature. And I had the design background, concept design, design development, color, any of those things, right? Fit. My partner had interest in being parts of the business that I felt like is what I brought to the table, and not sort of the void that we needed to fill in the business. And to be honest, I found out later, after we decided to partner, after we had sort of like gone through the go-to-market strategy and all these things, that my partner was interested in performing a role in the business that I didn't expect her to be interested in or sort of be responsible for. And it very much overlapped with what my role was going to be in the business. It's not that I didn't like, you know, want help or don't like input. In fact, my favorite thing in the world is to work in a team, and it's the thing that I miss the most. It's just that there was only going to be two of us, or two of us plus our husband, so sort of four of us. We really needed to like specialize in whatever the thing was going to be, because between the four of us, we had a lot of things. My husband's a CFO, her husband's a logistics sort of COO expert. But then there were things we didn't have: marketing, sales, e-commerce, like, you know, four of us can't be everything. So we certainly couldn't overlap because there was just too much to do. And it did become challenging, and it made her very unhappy, and it made me unhappy. And to not be enjoying the business before you even launch is not a good thing, because that's sort of the honeymoon stage, right? It would sort of be like fighting with your fiance before you even got married, and those people should not get married. You see it happen all the time, right? But the analogy really makes sense, because it is basically a marriage, and we knew that we weren't happy. And so, you know, that's why we sort of decided from both sides that we had not gone through all the steps to understand what each person wanted out of the business, and we didn't want the same things. And because of that, it would be best to part ways.
That is a really difficult experience to go through, parting ways with the business partner. But I have to say that it seems to me, in hearing your story, that there is like a major silver lining in the experience of having a partner that was a little bit your opposite. For you in particular, is that it seems to me like it really solidified your confidence in knowing where you wanted to bring your brand, that you do know actually what you want to do with this business, and you do have direction. Because you said earlier that you wouldn't have started this business because you didn't have the confidence, and you needed someone to tell you, wait, you have a point of view, you have something to say. And then for however painful it was, and for however long it was, it might felt like a time suck to you. It's like every single one of those conversations actually just established like what you want to do with your business. And I think that's really awesome, because not everyone can say that coming out of a dissolved partnership.
I think it's actually really notable that you've started this business at this point in your career, Jamie, because so often now, and many of the conversations we're having in this season of And Then This Happened are with much younger founders with founders who started their business at a much younger age. And I think it's both brave, but also importantly worth noting that sometimes starting a business with a lot of experience under your belt actually sets you up for such greater success, because you're coming at it with just kind of the, I don't know, there's something about you and your energy that's just a lot more calm and collected. And it's not to say you don't get nervous and aren't feeling totally thrown for a loop day in and day out like all founders are. But you do have this sort of just steadfastness that's really coming through in this chat. And I feel like I'd love to hear you tell us a little bit. Does that resonate with you? Is that the true story? Or what really is going on behind the scenes with you and your emotions? I mean, you literally just launched your company 2 months ago, so this is like a huge quarter for you. Tell us about some of the highs and lows. Tell us about what's keeping you up at night still, and what about change of scenery right now just has you super excited and ready for what's coming next?
So the biggest learning experience this year and a half has been all the things that I didn't know that I don't know about fashion. It's funny because I never networked before, actually, but networking has been like the coolest thing that's come out of the pandemic, I think. Whether it was while I was looking for a job or now with change of scenery, I mean, I just feel like so supported. Like, I would say this is the number one high from the company. People that I have not spoken to in 20 years, 30 years, messaging me, ordering, supporting me, coming out for trunk shows. I have a friend, Jill, from Sleepaway Camp, who I have not seen in over 20 years. She is hosting a trunk show for me tomorrow night at her pool club in Long Island. I mean, 20 years. I mean, she was just like, hi, do you want me to host a trunk show for you? Like, people have been amazing and unbelievable. And I don't know why I didn't network my whole life, but anybody who doesn't network, you should do it because people are amazing. Just like meeting cool people like you guys. I mean, people are doing cool things and people are smart and talented and have things to share. And I have not had one conversation that something didn't come out of. That was great. So for sure, that has been the biggest high, just meeting people. And I would say further than that, the generosity of women that are willing to support other women or dying to support other women has just been like so super cool. I heard someone talking about this on a podcast the other day. In corporate life, everybody is sort of like competing because at any level, there's only like one job above you that like a bunch of people want. I mean, when I look back, I don't know if I felt like this at the time because Kate Spade really was a wonderful place to work, but you know, you're always sort of like gunning against each other for the promotion or the attention of the executive team or the CEO or whatever it is, or your business to beat the other, you know, the ready-to-wear business to beat the handbag business, or, you know, everyone's competing for real estate in the store. Outside of corporate life, like in the founder world, everyone just wants to help each other, right? Do you guys find that too?
Yes.
For sure.
Very much, yeah.
We're still at the stage sometimes where we're looking through the orders we got each day, and there are a few enough of them still that we will like identify names that are familiar to us. There was also a friend from college that I haven't spoken to since college who purchased from Brass. I didn't get a nod from her or anything, but just knowing that people are out there supporting, even quietly, wanting no recognition or acknowledgement for their support.
Yeah. But you asked me about the lows because like I definitely don't sleep. So designing, design development, I've met with founders who are like, oh my God, how do you design? How do you pick prints? Whatever. I could do all that in my sleep because that's what I do, right? Like everyone has one thing. I met this really cool founder, Lee Rogers of Beverly Drive Sleepwear. She's a marketing person. So like all the marketing stuff comes so easy to her. I don't even know what marketing is. Like this is like literally brand new to me. I didn't even know that Instagram had an algorithm. So the stuff that keeps me up at night is the stuff that I don't know about because I hate not knowing stuff, and it's my money and we're completely self-funded. So it's all my money and it's my business. And I hate that there are things that I don't understand because I want to understand every single thing. I want to understand how SEO works and I want to understand how the Instagram algorithm works. And I want to know, last night it took me like 4 or 5 hours to fill out the forms for the bond for freight forwarding because I don't know how to freight forward something from overseas. So that's what keeps me up at night because I feel like everything I'm doing, I do it wrong. It all seems to work out, but I'm literally putting one foot in front of the other. And every day something comes up that I've never done before. I just had to make a retractable sign. I didn't even know what that was. I mean, now I know.
Like it's a like pop-up one? Like something that you
pull
up?
Yeah, it starts as a piece of metal and then you like sort of pull it up from the ground.
Yeah.
And you can travel with it. So like the first sign that I made for these trunk shows that I go around doing was just like a piece of cardboard, but you can't bring that on a plane.
Yeah.
So then I like get to the airport and you can't bring it on the plane. So then someone's like, oh, you should get a retractable sign. But I don't know. Like literally just every day, I'm just sort of trying to get through the day and I barely get through the day and I go to sleep at 2 o'clock in the morning and then can't sleep because all the things I got an Amazon like to-do list pad. I mean, maybe this is potentially a good or bad recommendation, but you can go on Amazon and type in to-do list pad and they only have one weirdly. And I got it and I was so excited, but now it gives me so much anxiety because I never cross everything off. And I love crossing things off a to-do list.
You Jamie, know, welcome to
welcome
being
to our
an entrepreneur.
World.
This because is, if I could show you my to-do list, that has been basically the same list since last September, just with things at the end added and crossed and more added and things at the top not yet crossed, et cetera. That's
just get used to feeling.
It, but
get used to feeling unsatisfied with your to-do list.
The one benefit to to-do lists, even if you don't cross everything off, you just have to have a mentality shift, which is you do accomplish so much every day, and it's important things that drive your business forward, whether it's a small bit or a large bit, each and every day. And having that account of all of those things, however small or large, is, you know, something to reflect back on at the end of every day. You just have to shift your mentality a little bit and not expect everything to be crossed off, but still take a moment to pause and reflect and feel great about what you have accomplished. Tomorrow's the next day, and there's always more time ahead. So
you're like a prophet.
That was very wise, Jenny.
It was very wise.
It was very wise.
I was going to say, my husband said to me, I was like crying to him the other day, that I just cry all the time, by the way. I said, I feel like I never get to the bottom of the pile. Like every day I like wake up and at 8 o'clock in the morning, I have these big dreams. And then by the end of the day, I never get to the bottom. And he goes, honey, you're never going to get to the bottom. You just have to keep digging.
I love it. So Jamie, tell us where we can find Change of Scenery.
You can find Change of Scenery on our website at www.shopchangeofscenery.com or on Instagram at @shopchangeofscenery.
Well, we cannot wait to check it out and spread the word. Jamie, this was such an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for sharing your story, Jamie. It's really inspirational for everyone. And we can't wait to see what happens with Change of Scenery. And I definitely feel like I need to buy a bathing suit like immediately. So,
well, thank you guys so much for having me.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the show. We want to take a quick moment to thank our co-creator, Klaviyo, who helps make these wonderful discussions possible. Klaviyo is a unified customer platform for email, SMS, and more that empowers online brands to own their data and grow on their own terms.
Check out more episodes of And Then This Happened at klaviyo.com/podcast. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. Now let's get back to the conversation. Wow, Katie, what an awesome conversation that was. I really kind of can't get over the fact that she was let go a day before her 40th birthday at the height of the pandemic. What an amazing experience, and must have really been earth-shattering for her.
Oh, I can't even imagine. That must have been such an all-time low for her. To think what it must have felt like having to feel like you were starting from scratch and rebuilding your career. Truly, she thought she had it all figured out. And then sort of to have the rug taken out from under her, it must have been terribly difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. What I also think is kind of remarkable is that because she was working in corporate fashion and she was so convinced that that was the right path for herself, she never really stopped to consider that she actually has some innate qualities that have the makings of an incredible entrepreneur. Innate optimism being one of them. We've obviously talked a lot about that through line between a lot of founders we've spoken to on this podcast. That innate optimism was really what propelled her in the direction of this venture, specifically because she recognized that in not having that corporate job that was so demanding of her time, that had her overseeing things at such a high level, the fact that that really took her away from all of her creative pursuits and the white space to be creative, I think is how she put it. It's kind of amazing that she was able to see those kernels of positivity in what we can only assume was a really tough time.
Oh, totally. I think that's really interesting and a really good point. Jamie is probably the most resistant founder that we talked to this whole season. She was resistant to entrepreneurship. She needed to be pushed along the way, but I think that to your point, those innate qualities, they're hard to escape once you start leaning into your venture that you're putting together. And Jamie has really like found her flow as an entrepreneur. And I'm really excited to see what she does next. And we've already learned so much from her. Jamie, thank you for joining us today. It was great to have you. And we can't wait to see where you take Change of Scenery.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of And Then This Happened.
To hear more episodes, go to klaviyo.com/podcast to explore the archive.
And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.
For everything that happens between now and next time,
good luck. We're with you, and we know you'll figure it out.
And Then This Happened is a Hit Start Media production co-created with Klaviyo.
We're your hosts and producers, Katie Demo and Jenny Rudin. Hit Start Media co-founder Theo Miller is creative director. Audio production is done by Nick Canepa and Matthew Suzuki, with production management by Olivia Laurie.
Thanks again for listening.